are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there, how you doing? Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you are never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver. I'm also known as Doc, the defender of caregivers. And for those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. So today's episode of the podcast is pretty interesting. You know, we feature personal family caregivers and their stories, and we also like to talk to the professionals of the world to get an insight for the type of people that are drawn to this industry and serve others. And this is a very interesting podcast. I met this man while I was on the speaking circuit. I don't know where I met him, which conference, but then I crossed paths with him a few other times. And, you know, being a caregiver can be all-consuming. It can cause you to stop taking care of yourself. It can cause you to focus on your failures rather than your successes. It can cause you to have, as we've talked about before, a shitty attitude where you say, I should have done this, I should have done that. But this is the story of a man that early in his life, when he was a young man, he was they were called orderlies back in the day. He started his career as an orderly at the encouragement of his parents to get him to quit playing with animals, for lack of a better description. And he's gone on to build a life, more so than a career, where he will step in periodically with the high intensity of being a professional caregiver, a leader in the senior living industry, in the retirement industry, and turn organizations around on a temporary basis. And then after that intensity, he retreats to his passions and his joys. And one of them is training animals. He taught me the difference between a lion and a tiger. Truth be known, I kind of already knew, but I just used the wrong words. He's been on national television in the past. He's worked at Dollywood with live shows. Well, I'll let him tell you about it. That's the better way to go. And I am remiss. I wanted to talk to him about bears, you know, and Doc the Bear, and you know, figure out, you know, where what type of bear in the real world Doc would have been. But anyway, I digress. Please allow me to introduce you to Dan Stockdale.
Dan Stockdale, I cannot thank you enough for agreeing to do this podcast. What kind of animal cage should I get you out of for this tonight?
No, actually, you got me out of the water. I'm down in Florida right now, so
okay.
You got me out of the ocean. So
okay, Will,
how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm excited about this. I've always been interested by your backstory that I don't fully know. So, you know, my listeners and I will hear more of it at the same time here, but. You know, I know you as, you know, the lions and tigers and bears kind of guy, that we crossed paths on the speaking circuit in, the senior living industry. So I'm excited about this.
Same here.
So there's a saying I have, and I promise I'll stop talking in a minute, but there's a saying I have in my Defender of Caregiver stuff, which is honor yourself as you care for others. So, Dan, please honor yourself as we get ready to share with others. Tell us where we can find you and, you know, anything that you want to plug, go ahead and get it out on the table and then we'll have a nice conversation.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks. I appreciate it. The biggest thing I want to plug is my new book. It's $1,000 a copy. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding. Pay in advance. No, it's Joel Gilden. No, I'm CEO of an organization that I just started up called Ringmastered. And, it's kind of the, I guess the, when you get to my age, you're kind of like at the culmination where you're thinking about, you know, what kind of things can I leave for the industry? I'm dating myself here, but I've been in healthcare since 1979. probably before a lot of the listeners are even born. So
you go back before me, and I must say you're better looking and younger looking. But I'm a little taken aback right now.
Oh, well, thank you. No,
yeah, seriously. I mean, I'm not hitting on you or anything, but you're a good looking dude, and you've been at this longer than I have. Well, thank you for caring since 1979.
Well, yeah, I started off as a CNA back in the day, though they called us orderlies. So
right.
Yeah, started off kind of before the term CNA came around, but started off as an orderly, and I've always been, I guess, a caregiver at heart. I was very fortunate to be raised by two parents who had service at the forefront of their minds as well. My mother was an RN, and my father was a pastor, so. You know, everybody has kind of raised around people giving service to others, and have kind of enjoyed following in that path over the past several decades. So,
yeah.
As far as to answer your question, where can people find me? If they go to ringmaster.com, that's where they can find me at. That's just ringmaster.com.
And that's ringmastered, like a circus ringmastered, or like I'm dying to talk. We'll get there to talk about your experience with, wild animals and all of that. But so it's ringmastered.com.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And everybody will find all the links to the social media and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, YouTube, all of that stuff. So, you know, it's, just go to ringmaster.com and you can branch out from there as much as you want to.
Okay. And in a nutshell, I mean, you're serving leaders in the industry and, you know, offering coaching services and tips on how to make their organizations better. And, so you and I met somewhere along the lines over the years on the speaking circuit, and you were traveling around with a lion. For a little while.
Well, it's actually, I've traveled around a lot of different critters. My primary focus has been tigers, but
tigers.
I've worked with lions. Yeah, tigers.
I grew up in Baltimore. They're the same to me.
There you go.
So the first lesson, tiger. All right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah. So I guess I should explain a little bit.
Because I keep throwing this weird curve to everybody, including you, but I'm just fascinated by, listen, when I go to do a speaking engagement, it's a hard thing for me to remember to take a thumb drive. And at one point you were traveling with an exotic animal. So I'll shut up now and let you have the reins.
No, that's fine. Yeah, doing the speaking with the animals, I guess there's a lot of unpredictability in it, but there's also a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that the meeting planner never even knows about. You know, we have to get permits from state, federal, local municipalities. We have to file our travel itinerary with APHIS. We have to have health certificates done on every animal within the past 30 days. And it's actually a very complicated speaking gig to do. You know, it doesn't matter if it's small or big, or if it's for 5 people or 5,000, it's same process no matter what.
Right.
In certain states and localities, they'll have certain parameters, like if you've got a tiger on stage, you can only use a baby tiger under 25 pounds and 3 months. So I've actually had one of the state wildlife people show up backstage right before I went on with a scale to weigh the baby tiger. So it's been kind of interesting. But when I was actually 15, some friends of our family owned an exotic animal park. So when I was 15 years old, I had the absolute pleasure of training dolphins and sea lions. And that kind of began my just being enamored with exotic animals in general, and how intelligent they are, and the human-animal connection and the similarities that we share with them. And then when I was 17, my mother, who I mentioned was a nurse, she called me Danny back there. She's like, Danny, says, you're never going to get married and be able to support anybody if you just keep playing with animals. So she got me a job at a hospital as a orderly. And so I've been living the same life with, you know, kind of two vocations, working with wildlife as well as working with in the healthcare industry and with the senior population. So that's kind of how all that started. You know, I've done over 500 bald eagle shows for Dollywood. I've, you know, graduated from Hollywood Animals Exotic Animal Husbandry and Training Course. And, so that's been a huge part of my life. And then on the healthcare side, was working in the hospital as an orderly and until about from 79 till about 85. And then by some fluke was hired to be the executive director of a small CCRC that was in bankruptcy, turned it around, and then was asked to do another one when I was 27. And so that's kind of how I got into the administrative side. And from there, now that's just kind of grown.
For some of the folks listening, a CCRC is a continuing care retirement community where they have independent living, whether it's in cottages or apartments, and then they usually have a small assisted living option and a nursing home option all on the same campus, so that as you progress or decline, if you will, in your capabilities and need more help, you don't have to leave the campus. So you were doing that at 27. That's because on CCRCs, you really get into some, you know, really difficult conversations sometimes, and you were navigating those waters at that age. I'm very impressed.
Don't be impressed. I don't know how good of a job I did. That's the reason my hair started turning gray at 30, you know.
I wasn't there, obviously.
The model's great, though, because it does allow people to stay on the same campus as their needs change. So, from that standpoint, it really is a great experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it was very much in favor for a while, and then it fell out of favor, and now it seems to be back in favor. And I had somebody describe it as kind of like paying for a insurance policy on the back end. So instead of paying, you know, over a lifetime, you sort of make an initial investment, and then from then on, you are sort of, covering yourself for what might come. And I don't mean to keep going back to traveling with the animals, but you're clearly an organized person. You're clearly passionate to have gone as far as you did in both of these seemingly different avenues, yet you managed to tie them together by speaking in the senior living industry and using your animals, you know, as a, you know, to be provocative and get attention, but also to make a point about, you know, building relationships and understanding the people that you're working with, whether it's an animal or a human. And I've just always been impressed with the way that you've gone about things. So I'm happy to have you here with us today. What are you most focused on now, other than launching Ringmastered? I mean, what's got your fancy? Because I got a feeling it's going to turn into a whole new thing for you.
Well, yeah, I've got a couple things, honestly. Yeah, I've got, obviously, Ringmaster. Then I also, I'm still doing an awful lot of consulting in the industry, going in anywhere from a 1-3-4 month contract and assisting during times of transition as interim or going into troubled communities. So that's been, interesting. And I was just telling somebody today that, you know, when you feel like you've seen it all and experienced it all, something comes up and it's like, oh, I've never encountered that before. And just had one of those situations, you know, here a couple of days ago that was like that for me. So it's, I'm very, very, very passionate about senior housing and just ensuring that we do everything we can to honor and take care of the elderly we serve. So, yeah, that's a big passion of mine. And then, yeah, I've always wanted to live on a sailboat. So, about a year ago, I bought a sailboat. So I'm, when I'm not on the road or not in a community on a, on an assignment, I, live on a sailboat in South Florida. And so, you know, do a little bit of sailing. And then I've also gotten into ultralight hiking and have hiked about 300 miles of the Appalachian Trail. So
oh, wow.
I have a YouTube channel on that that's becoming more of a travel channel than anything. But we're getting ready to start spinning that into not just hiking, but also my traveling adventures and sailing and all of those types of things. So, you know me, it's, I'm the poster child for ADHD that goes untreated.
Yeah, no doubt.
and a lot of different things.
Yeah. So what is ultralight hiking?
So ultralight hiking is, when I was a kid growing up, we grew up in Northeast Ohio, and my parents, they valued experiences more than things, which was great for us kids because they were always taking us places like Washington, D.C. and Gettysburg and to the Smoky Mountains and to Florida and to NASA. And, you know, it seems like every year we would inevitably end up swinging through the mountains of Tennessee at least once or twice a year. And I remember one time when I was probably about 8 years old, we were in the Smoky Mountains right up outside of Gatlinburg, up on Newfound Gap, and I saw this sign for the Appalachian Trail, and it was like 1,900 miles to Maine or something from Newfound Gap, and I'm like, how far is that? That's got to be a long way, but that kind of
yeah.
planted the seed for me to get into hiking, and then, goodness gracious, 49 years later, I found myself, I know, half a century, I should not be this old, but I found myself just really, you know, starting to explore hiking again. And so ultralight hiking, I started, you know, first of by planning to do some hiking on the Appalachian Trail, and then that grew into me watching videos about it, and then recognizing that I didn't want to be that guy out there on the trail with a 50-pound pack that was walking 3 feet and then stopping and panting for an hour and then going another 3 feet. So I started, when I was traveling, I would pick up a piece of gear and I'd be sitting in my hotel room and I had a little kitchen scale and I'd be weighing one spoon versus another and one tent versus another. And, you know, there's this whole genre of folks out there that are into ultralight hiking. And the whole idea is to get your gear, your whole backpack weight down as low as possible so that you can make better time. It's easier on the legs, the knees, and hips and all of that. And so I just focused on that and got my gear weight down to, and my summer weight's less than 10 pounds now. And,
wow.
Yeah, so I can, yeah, and of course the technology with tents and sleeping bags and the different materials and fabrics that are available are a huge contributor to the weight reduction. But that's kind of how I got into the whole ultralight hiking thing.
So when you go out on a trip, how long will you be back? How long will you be out hiking?
You know, anywhere from a couple days to a couple weeks at a time. And
wow.
I will tell you, you don't want to be around me when I've been out there for 2 weeks at a time. Because you're wearing the same clothes. You don't shave. You know, it's quite an experience. Here in a few days, I'm getting ready to actually go back out on the trail for probably about 3 or 4 weeks. I want to knock out about 300 miles. So,
wow. Well, I admire your ability to detach like that. That's not something I've mastered to be able to, let go of things. Like that, I keep thinking that I'm the kind of guy that would do that one day, but I just, I don't know. I,
there's a lesson to be learned there of being how you're able to do that. I'm amazed.
You know, I think, and if I could encourage anybody that's listened to the podcast, I've seen in so many instances, and almost everybody listening, I'm sure, has seen it, where somebody works really hard, is dedicated to their career, and just, you know, goes at it constant until they retire, and they plan on retiring, and they do retire, and within a couple of years, they're just not physically able to do all those things. So, mother, she was 63 years old when she is diagnosed with cancer, and passed away when she was 70. So, me at 57, I don't take every day for granted. When I wake up in the morning, if I'm not doing what I'm absolutely thrilled to do, then I make a change and I do it. So, how I've operated over the years, and so far, it's served me well.
Yeah, well, I'm not there. I got work to do, so I'm listening. I absolutely am enamored with the thought of doing that. So, so you were telling me, are you? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to, just to, you know, go on that just a second. You know, all of us have go through these times in our lives where, you know, money comes and goes, and you know, when you go through that a time or two, you realize it's not about the money, because the more money you make, the more you spend. It's really about the experiences you have, and it's about the journey. I think so many people are focused on achieving some destination where they're going to feel like they've arrived. And, yeah, that's just never been my philosophy. You know, National Speakers Association, probably 10, 15 years ago, the chairman of the association that year, the president, had a theme for the convention, and it was enjoy the journey. And I have embraced that ever since. You know, live each day and enjoy the journey. Don't focus on the destination. Enjoy about making an impact and, you know, being fulfilled every single day. So that's kind of where that whole philosophy has come from.
Well, I admire it. I definitely could benefit from learning to live like that a little bit more. So you're a passionate man. There's no doubt about that by the way you're living your life. And before we hit the record button, you were starting to tell me about some experiences that you'd had recently and how much you want to, you know, create opportunities and messages for people in the industry, because there's some, you know, when you're, I always joke about having the audacity to believing that we can actually take care of other people, because if you really get down to it, it's like an impossible dream. I mean, you can do your level best, but things still happen. And did you want to start to, you know, step into that a little bit and talk about the experience you had?
Sure. Yeah. You know, one of the most difficult things that we have to do in healthcare is abuse investigations. And the way the law reads is any allegation of abuse has to be handled immediately. And it doesn't say an allegation that is credible from a credible source. It could literally be someone running in your front door of your community off the street saying the patient in room 12 is being physically abused and running back out, and you don't even know who they are. And, you know, so the letter of the law is that any allegation of abuse has to be taken as credible and reported and investigated. You know, we just had an incident with the client that I've been working with here recently, and where we had two male CNAs taking care of a resident with a VIM score of about 3. And you know, for those of you that aren't familiar with VIM scores, basically it goes from 0 to 15, and the higher you are on that scale, the more alert and oriented you are, I guess is the simple layman's way of putting it. But this resident made an allegation. And the beautiful part of this one was that this individual has around-the-clock caregivers in the room with her. So all care is witnessed, and not only that, there were two people actually assisting this resident. So there was a witness from the staff plus one of the family's caregivers as well in the room when this allegation happened. Nevertheless, it was an allegation, so we had to follow the process. And what really struck me in this case was that one of the two individuals that we had to suspend, one of them was fine, but the other one took it so hard. And I really feel like, you know, we had failed him as a community and as team members on the in-servicing side, so that everybody understands what the steps are when an allegation of abuse takes place. So, it was just a very, very big struggle. And for those who are listening who may not know, you know, the first thing that has to happen is we have to make sure that the person is separated from the accuser so that there's no more harm. And then you suspend. The technical term is a suspension pending investigation. And so they're suspended while you do your investigation. If nothing's found wrong, then most organizations go ahead and pay them for the shifts that they were off and they've had a mini vacation. But this gentleman took it extremely, it's very difficult for him to comprehend and absorb. And he's like, well, why didn't you guys investigate it first before you, suspended me? And, he had personal reasons at home why it was just problematic for him. But bottom line is, that's part of why I mentioned Ringmaster. Is I want, if people are interested in these kind of topics, one of the things I'm doing through Ringmastered is I'm going to be releasing a video that should be available by the time this podcast is released. And it's for caregivers, whether you're a private caregiver taking care of a loved one in your family, or if you are working in a facility, a community, assisted living, nursing home, it doesn't matter. The same applies. But I'm making a video just to help inform people as to what the process is. Because in this instance, I really felt like we failed to let the staff know exactly the steps that were required by law to take. So at any rate, that video will be available. And hopefully, if nothing else, just to let people know what to expect should anything like that. Hopefully it never occurs, but if anything like that ever does happen, where you're accused of something, so that you know that these are not personal things against you, it's a process that has to be implemented. So, that's the thing. Let me make one really quick note. If they go to ringmaster.com, they'll see a silver plan listed there. There's like several plans. There's a silver, a gold, a platinum, and a diamond. Just sign up for the silver plan. It is free. It costs nothing. Yeah. Frankly, I don't want anybody's money. I don't want them to sign up for gold or platinum or diamond or anything else, because then I have to work harder. But all the education is free. Anything we do video-wise is free. So if anybody's interested in seeing these things, just sign up under that silver plan and you get everything. So
yeah, I signed up on the silver plan myself right before the podcast, and you said I was going there when you were talking. One of the caregiver distortions I talk about is personalization, where you take responsibility for things that you're not really responsible for. And I've been there, and I've seen people that have had allegations brought against them. I've experienced caregivers having to go through this when the person that brought the allegation was known to be, having hallucinations and you still have to treat it as though it's credible until you know otherwise. And it is a very difficult process when people are standing there going, but we know that this was a hallucination, this was fantasy, it didn't occur, why am I going through this? And this kind of education would be extremely helpful. But even in the face of education, it's still a very emotional thing to go through. I travel a lot, and I got home tonight in time to do the podcast, the call, and in the mail I had two speeding tickets in one of these video enforced areas. Got one in the morning and one in the afternoon when I came back through the same area. And of course, I didn't even know that the surveillance was there. And you get this thing, and you know it's something as simple as a ticket. When you find the finger pointing at you, it gets very emotional. So even when you prep them, it's still emotional.
Yeah, very true. Now, Lon, you know you shouldn't have bought that Lamborghini, though. I mean, all fairness.
it's my sister's Toyota Prius. You know, what I'm loving most about this podcast is that I'm learning. I talk so much, and I whether it's speaking or coaching or just living my life at work with others, you know, it's like I'm blessed. I'm in a position of authority often, and therefore, you know, I tend to think I know what I'm talking about, and I'm learning so much. But another life lesson I learned is this Toyota Prius. When my sister bought it, it was like the second year they came out, and I said, "Oh, you're wasting your money. That hybrid stuff, it's never going to work," and blah blah blah. So like 15 years later, I bought it from her, and I'm still driving it to this day.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah, it gets like 45 miles a gallon. I mean, it's
pretty amazing.
Life lessons, they're everywhere. So I
just don't tell Elon Musk this whole hybrid thing doesn't work. Don't tell him that, you know.
I'm wondering if you can tell Elon anything. I don't know.
I don't think you can.
Well, you know, Dan, I don't know if we've covered what we're supposed to cover. The nice thing about a podcast is there's no rules, but I've enjoyed hearing you talk and hearing your passion and seeing how you're living your life. I know I've learned some lessons for myself. I hope that, you know, this podcast might be more geared towards leaders in the industry or frontline caregivers, the professional side of things. But I really value that personal family caregivers are out there hearing how sincere a guy like you is, are, I'm not sure which is the proper one, about, you know, your place in this industry and how you're living your life so that you can be good in this industry. You know, I see all these advertisements about, you know, did your loved one get harmed in a nursing home? Call the attorney, you know, all these things. And there's it's so sensationalized and things do happen, and when they do, I'm the first one to say something should be done about it. Somebody should be made whole. Somebody should pay the price. But for the most part, people are out there working really hard, and it's a tough thing. The nursery rhyme saying, which of these things is not like the other? Which of these things just doesn't belong? You know, caregivers find themselves in intimate settings with family members, and they're the only one from the outside world that's there, and it's easy to point fingers and blame, but these are folks that, you know, none of them make a lot of money, including the administrators like you and I, or the people running the whole show. In-N-Out Burger, general manager of an In-N-Out Burger, I was reading an article, they make like 50% more than a typical nursing home administrator in the country.
Wow.
Managing
only
a Wawa.
A vegetarian, you know?
Are you a vegetarian too?
It depends on the day, actually. I try. I really try hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, you immerse yourself in whatever you get into. So I've officially allowed this podcast to devolve a little bit. So I want to get it back on track before we close it out. So I frequently ask our guests to give us a "you might be a caregiver if" statement. That it can either be humorous or funny, but the idea is to try and capture the personality of the individual and, you know, their caregiver experience. So do you want to take a stab at a "you might be a caregiver if" statement about yourself?
Wow. I'm going to dig way, way, way back a few decades. You know, when I was an orderly, and I shouldn't even say this, but I was on night shift, and so a lot of our patients at that point, you know, they were, you know, still had those old hospital gowns. I don't know if they still have those things or not, but they're the ugliest things in the world. But yeah. My charge nurse used to joke with me is she'd see a patient that got up during the night and maybe couldn't sleep and was walking down the hall. She said, "Can you identify him from the rear with that slit open in the back of that hospital gown?" So you might be a caregiver if you can identify your residents from the backside when they're wearing a hospital gown.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like it was true in 1979, and it's still true today. I mean, you got to find the humor in what we do, because I mean, it's tough things. You know, when you were starting to talk about the whole how you investigate abuse, and I can't tell you how many times I go to a GNA or a CNA, by the way, geriatric nursing assistant or certified nursing assistant, for those that don't know the abbreviations, and you're going up to these people that are, you know, they've chosen this path for a reason, and it's not necessarily because they have excellent writing skills. And you're asking them to give me a statement for something that is going to have a material impact on their future, and now they're relying on their ability to express themselves in a written fashion to make a statement about something they don't really even know why they're being asked, that's going to live forever and going forward. And people are just put in these tough spots all the time. And you know, something that I try and do, like if I'm getting a bad meal or the service is late, or, you know, Vicki and I went out to dinner the other night and we had this great server and the meal just wouldn't come and wouldn't come and wouldn't come. And I kept saying, you know, this is nothing you're doing. You're doing a great job. But at earlier stages in my life, I'd have blamed everybody. And I really, because I see myself and other people on the other end of that finger, I try and not point it at others as much as I used to. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, we have so many people in this industry, and, you know, if you're a caregiver, and, you know, hats off to you, Lon, for, you know, the podcast and for your mission, you know, providing a forum for caregivers. But, you know, if you're a caregiver listening to this right now, thank you for what you're doing. Whether you're taking care of a mother or father in the house, or whether you are working in a facility, a community, an assisted living, a senior citizen, or wherever you're at, thank you for what you're doing, because it takes a special individual and somebody with an awful lot of love and compassion in their heart. So just wanted to acknowledge and honor them.
Well, I couldn't have said that better, and I appreciate you saying it. And, I just have to say, throughout a childhood that allowed you to work with exotic animals and go, I mean, you're a success at whatever you do. I mean, you got to doing live paid performances in Dollywood with wild animals. You got to traveling around the country with exotic animals to teach other people things. I mean, you don't just do that as a part-time hobby. You don't run a CCRC at 27 years old and then be asked to run others and turn them around without, and you don't hike 300 miles with a 10-pound pack without being a really passionate, committed person. And, you know, I know of the work that you do, and I thank you for applying those skills to serve others. Dan Stockdale, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Well, thank you, Lon. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, Dan. Thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Okay, folks, there you have it. Another episode of the podcast. Dan taught me a lot in that podcast. I'm not going to be taming tigers anytime soon or teaching eagles how to land on my shoulder or arm or whatever crazy things that he would do. I might try and live in a sailboat one day if Vicky would allow me to. But the lesson that I want to learn from Dan is, as he said, you know, if you're not waking up every day and, you know, doing something you love, then you're not living right. And to those of you that maybe grudgingly are waking up every day and doing something you love, which is taking care of a loved one, we're not talking about you in the moment. I mean, you know, you're doing what you got to do, so to speak. And there is a future for you beyond your current situation. And that's the story of this podcast. Being a caregiver, whether it be professional or personal, changes us. And it can change us for the better if we're able to choose that path and keep that perspective. We all have unique caregiver stories, and I hope you're enjoying hearing some of them here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Please leave us a 5-star review. Let me know what you think. But most importantly, please share this with others that you think might benefit from these caregiver stories and the podcast. Okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.